The following program from our Compassion Radio archives originally aired in July of 2013.
On today's Compassion Radio.
So we started something that we said we didn't want to be church as usual. We wanted to be church unusual.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Good news declared, God's love delivered. Welcome to the Daily Ministry Broadcast Journal that tells of the new thing God is doing in some of the world's toughest places. This is Compassion Radio. Well, today, once again, we're going to find out the inside story of a missionary family from South Africa and the truly unique ways they minister in their homeland and far beyond. Lots to get to today, so here's Norm to get us started.
All right, our guest today and back for a second day is Reverend Dr. Paul Siaki, a marvelous husband, father of a magnificent family, but equally important, an extremely effective servant for the Lord with his family as a missionary in South Africa. And Paul, I just really want to welcome you back for a second day to Compassion Radio.
Thank you very much, Norm. It's a real pleasure to be back with you guys.
Well, we've been talking about South Africa. That's a place that, although we don't know it anywhere near as well as you do, a place that we love.
Yeah.
And because we have the Door of Hope project that we're involved in and have been for many years in Johannesburg, where you are doing so much of your work, and you know that ministry. It has really been fun to talk to you, so I've been looking forward to this second program. Paul, one of the attractions to me about talking with you is that you said, we plant churches. I'm a church planter, among the many things that you do. And then applied to that, you use the word unusual. And of course, immediately that captivated me and piqued my interest. What do you mean when you say that you are a person engaged in an unusual form of church planting there in South Africa?
Thank you. I have had a very varied background, I guess you might say. My father has been a Baptist minister, and we'd been involved with a number of different ministries. And then even as I was growing up, I was able to be exposed to a number of different groups, Christian groups, and wonderful Christians around the world. I studied in Israel for a while, and then I eventually joined the Anglican Communion in the world. And when I went to Southern Africa, and especially in Johannesburg, the Anglican Church is very active there and is very big. And it's growing quite well on the continent, but not so much in Southern Africa. So I did a presentation to the House of Bishops, the Anglican House of Bishops, about 10 years ago, actually, in which I showed them that they were in decline. And that if they didn't do something about it, they would begin to just lose rapidly and not be able to turn everything around. And so through a series of different events, I was part of forming the denominational church growth portfolio, the department. I remain on that board, even though I try and stay out of the details of everything. But I continue to be on that board just to see growth and missions and ministry and evangelism happen in through that denomination in Southern Africa. And then about 7 years ago, I had spent 7 years as a pastor, a priest in Soweto. And then in discussion with the Bishop of Johannesburg, we thought, you know, we need a church that really appeals to people who have left the mainline churches or just don't have a relationship with God, are very far from God, don't know him. And so we thought, well, how do we do that as an Anglican church? And so we started something that we said we didn't want to be church as usual. We wanted to be church unusual.
Oh, I love
it. So we said, what do we do to make people be attracted to having fun at church, have joy in the joy of the Lord? And, you know, we basically see so many people that are still there. It's a very strong mainline presence in South Africa. And quite a lot of people will go just for a number of reasons or because they have to. And we are saying, hey, you know, we want you to come to church because you really love God. You're passionate and you just want to be there. And so we've really begun to do that. I try and make the sermons as relevant and exciting as possible. I've preached from a treadmill. I've preached while I was cutting.
Right?
I've preached from sitting on a couch. I've preached while I was playing chess with somebody. We try and put that out. As I'd mentioned the other day also, I wear an all-black jersey. I'll wear a number of crazy things, and we advertise some very different series. And so we just try and to get people who would be attracted to coming to God and perhaps have in their life written God off. And we do things unusual. We'll make sandwiches for the poor and lunches in our worship service, because I want them to know that worship's not just about singing, but about your whole body, your whole life, and, you know, dedicating your life to that. We'll make some hygiene kits for kids in squatter camps or for homeless people. So these are a number of the things that we do that we just want people to really be truly joyful followers of Christ.
You know, Paul, this is really exciting. There's something, maybe a distinction that is old stuff to you. The difference between, let's say, a township, like Soweto, but then there are these squatters camps. What's the difference between the two?
Well, the townships were established a number of years ago when apartheid first started. So you'd be going way back into the late 40s, but then it began there. And townships were basically the areas that were separated from the major cities where they would put all the non-Caucasians, the non-Europeans, as they used to call them. So you would get blacks and colors and Indians who would be put into these different areas away from, well, say, the European areas.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the things that the apartheid government did for segregation and for keeping the races apart. And so Soweto, which is not actually an African word, it stands for Southwest Township, but it's just over the years. It is the largest township in the world, and it's in South Africa. It's still, Soweto still carries a very big influence. It is still very respected. And we were there for 7 years and did quite a number of ministries there. I was chairman of the Soweto Ministers Fraternal, which was all the churches working together to achieve change there. But they are an established community, very much like you would see just any neighborhood.
Yeah.
Whereas a squatter camp rises up from those, you know, again, the name squatter, where they don't have a place to stay, so they'll come and they'll find an empty piece of land, and they will put up temporary shacks, which were meant to be temporary, but eventually, of course, become long-term, and they're made out of tin or wood or cardboard, often many. And then they just keep growing, and there's usually not hygiene there, but governments will step in and put portable toilets and other things there just because the disease is rampant.
Sure.
And so we also work with squatter camp people and ministries quite a lot. My wife mentors at-risk teenage girls in the squatter camps, really trying to get them to, in a sense, respect themselves more, and also to just learn and be tutored a bit, and to try and imagine that they have a future.
That is one great illustration from our special guest, Paul Siaki, on today's Compassion Radio. And we'll hear more from him in just a moment. But a quick reminder that you can hear this program again and get details about our special offer and other great resources at CompassionRadio.com or through our Facebook page. If you haven't connected to us yet, please do so. Let's go ahead and get back now to Norm and his special guest, Paul Siaki, on today's Compassion Radio.
And so we go in a lot, and we'll do food drives or clothing drives, or during winter, blanket drives, this kind of thing. So they are very poor in the squatter camps, and they'd be about 80% unemployment and about 30% unemployment in the townships.
Wow. You know, again, during a visit to Johannesburg, Sharon and I were taken by our host to, I guess the best way to describe it was a bit of high ground.
Yes.
And they said, now, look out as far as your eye can see. And we did. And we were told, what you're seeing are two adjacent to each other squatters' camps.
Mm.
One of them was called the Winnie Mandela squatters' camp. And I don't remember what the other one off to the right side was called.
Yeah.
But we were told that we were looking at way over a million people in those two camps. I will never, to the day I die, will never forget visiting a school that had been established by an Anglo woman. I don't know where she was from. She might have been South African. For children who were coming out of these, as you described them, you know, homes made out of cardboard and tin and things kind of leaning together.
Yeah.
And this is home with no floor other than just the red earth underneath. Right. And we walked into the school, Paul, and in that school was a collection of the most handsome, well-groomed, clean, intelligent-looking. Their eyes just shone with intelligence. And as we looked at them, they are all wearing polo shirts of the same color, little uniforms. Yeah. And as it turned out, this woman had made them all for the children. And then at one point, while we were standing outside, we saw one of the little kids going to an outhouse. And then he, of course, came out, went back into the school, the classroom area. And as he entered, he took a rag from his back pocket, not a filthy back pocket. His pants were creased and clean. And he took this rag and he wiped the dust off of his shoes. He polished those shoes before he reentered. It makes me want to weep just to think of him and to think of the contribution that that woman was making to the lives of these children. And I just absolutely will never forget that sight. And much of her money was coming from corporations. But then she said the corporations had decided not to give any more. And the issue was, what's going to happen to the school? But beyond that, what's going to happen to the kids? I mean, is that a kind of typical situation where someone tries to express the love of Christ in that very, very difficult place and give the children a sense of self-worth and importance and bring out the native intelligence that God has given to them? And then they run out of money and who knows what happens then.
Right. It is actually very common. And then also people who have hooked into some government grants also find out that changes as well. And it's very disappointing, and it can be quite devastating.
Yeah.
But also corporations recently, there has been a move away from anything that is kind of overtly Christian, too. And so a lot of corporations will actually pull their funding because of that. So
I see. Yeah. Tell us a story, Paul, about someone or a group of people. Let's just put it like this. A story that you will never forget, and I'm sure, I mean, there are so many over the years, but is there one that you can pick from that would be indicative of the challenge that you face as a missionary there, but also the power of the love of Jesus Christ as experienced in the lives of children, families, men, women, whatever?
One of the big ones that was for us was a young orphan named Christopher. My wife teaches at a local school, so Christopher as an orphan. He did not get adopted, and then he grew up, and the school gave him a grant to attend the school. And so by fourth grade, he was in Barb's class, but he was not doing well. There were many other older children, orphans, at this orphanage. And so there was no one to give him one-on-one time. His grades weren't good. He couldn't handle concepts, and he was untidy, dirty, unfortunately, and unkept. And so Barb just was praying for him, and we thought, well, we should maybe find him a tutor. And we just been praying, and I had some extra money in some ministry funds, which is always good. You never know where some money will come from. But we found him. Yeah. Barb was praying, and she was driving along the road one day and saw a young African youth pastor and just pulled over and asked him and asked Phil if he would like to tutor a young man. And Phil said, yeah, I've been praying that God would allow me to be a father figure. And
wow.
So they started getting together, and the change was like night and day for Christopher. Christopher's grades and exams, everything else improved dramatically. He, was tidy. His clothes were clean. A lot more self-respect, of course, self-esteem. And just because one young man was giving him a few hours a week, he just did not have any of that in his life. And I just thought that's just such a great example of also the example of how our Father, our Heavenly Father, can become more real in young Christopher the orphan's life. He's able to see what it means to have someone, a male figure in his life who loves him.
Yeah.
And so, that's kind of one of our the ones that we look at. And there's a lot of those kind of stories where you just keep trying.
It's an impossible question, and I apologize for asking it, but what you've said is how many are there in that condition, and how many are there who will say, as this young youth pastor said, I've been praying about the opportunity to become a father figure, and yes, I will take this on. What a beautiful spirit.
Yeah.
One of the things about Compassion Radio, Paul, is that, among other things, that we call ourselves and hope to be called by others is a signpost ministry. And what that means is, ultimately, we point away from ourselves. It's not about Compassion Radio. I think you understand that as you speak about what you do. It's not about you. But because we have a media presence, one of the things that we are so committed to is pointing to places in the world that seem hopeless, whether it's war, whether it's poverty, abject poverty, whether it's various kinds of social dislocation, whether, it's nations falling apart. No matter what it is and where it is, we operate on the assumption, and I believe it's very biblical, that the risen Christ is alive. And in particular, in relation to the poor of the world, he is present. He's there. And the signpost image says, our job is to find those places. So we go to the toughest places on earth, and we ask the Lord to give us, in some cases, a kind of sanctified imagination, because it takes a certain level of discernment sometimes to see it, but to show us where is Christ at work in these, what we call the worst places on earth, which in many respects, I would say, according to the Lord, he would say the most loved places on earth. And we point to them, and then we try to communicate to our listeners. And what I want to say about that is that there are no God-forsaken places. God has not forsaken any place. And through the living Christ, he is at work and alive there. And you are serving that active, compassionate, powerful Christ in one of the key countries of the world, without a doubt, South Africa.
Absolutely.
I honor what you do. Your family is such a compelling example of what Christ can do. And I, in a way, I'd like to say, if you want to see what God can do with a whole family committed to the mission of God in the world, we used to talk about sending missionaries.
Yeah.
And missionary is a good word. But the mission of God in the world, if you want to see what a whole family can do and what their lives can be like in terms of joy and fulfillment and all of that, whereas so many times people say, oh, but I have a family, I can't go. Mm. Well, maybe if you feel that way, it's you better not. But you're the perfect example, you and your family, of what God can do and produce, and the ways in which God can use you as a family, and the fulfillment that you find in serving him together is, I know, it is, certainly it's, it must be frustrating at times, as is parenthood and family life for all of us, but it is a rich experience. I just want to kind of mow down, if I can, that kind of attitude that says, well, I have kids. Yeah. We can't go. No, you should go. Your kids will be the better for it.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually shared on the home group, some home group at one of our supporting churches asked if we would share about raising godly teens. And we just said, you know, we praise God that they're out there, that they're, you know, every day faced with things that don't allow themselves to kind of maybe wallow in self-pity or, thinking their lives are unfair or whatever it might be. And they're always challenged to, I guess, see the face of Christ in people around them.
Well, having the eyes of Christ is so important when it comes to looking at the world, the mega picture as well as the mini situations around us. And Paul, you and your family and the ministry you have in South Africa is a perfect example of how God can use you and the fulfillment that comes in service and the powerful impact that you can have in serving him in the mission of God in South Africa. What a pleasure to have you on Compassion Radio. I look forward to more contact with you, and you're our kind of people, let me tell you.
Thank you. All right. I really appreciate you taking the time and inviting me onto your show.
Wonderful to have you, Paul. Paul Siaki and his beautiful family, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today on Compassion Radio. Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you.
What a compelling interview today. This broadcast, by the way, from our vast Compassion Radio archives. Friends, with you at our side, we'll continue the tremendous work of literally saving the lives of abandoned infants in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Cher, tell our listeners a bit more about this if they don't know about it already.
Well, we discovered this years and years ago. One of our listeners from Indonesia actually told us about this ministry, which is in South Africa. The pastor of a small church in a very difficult neighborhood in Johannesburg, South Africa, discovered that babies were being disposed of in the most terrible of ways, from mothers who were either drug addicted or too poor to be able to take care of a baby. Some of them were prostitutes. There are all kinds of sad reasons why these babies were thrown away. Well, the pastor came up with a unique idea, and this was the first one that we had ever heard about anywhere in the world, although they are in several places now. They cut a hole in the security wall around their church. They put in a bin and a cover on each side. They made the bin sensitive to weight so that it could set off an alarm within the church, and they put up posters around the neighborhood saying that they were willing to take the babies that were going to be disposed of. Well, that was one church, one little baby house, and when we were there, they had about 30 children. Since then, they've gone to well over 2,000 babies that have been rescued either through the door or brought to them by police or other people. Many of those children have now been adopted into Christian families. We were able to purchase the first house for them outside of the Hillbrow, desperately dangerous area, where the babies, as they became crawlers and toddlers, could have a place to safely move around in grass, in clean air, and in a big house. Well, they've gone on now to three houses, and they're in the process of now building the Door of Hope Village. And we just really, really pray that you will care for these little children. By giving through Compassion Radio, we will be able then to help them with the village and with the care for the babies. As always, you can call and talk to our wonderful people here at the office at 1-800-868-2478. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or the easiest way always is simply to go online and give through our secure server at CompassionRadio.com.
Thanks, Cher. Please give us a call at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Reach us by mail at Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or give safe and secure online at CompassionRadio.com. That toll-free number once more, 1-800-868-2478.
I'm Jim Governale. On behalf of Norm and Cher Nelson, Bram Floria, and the entire Compassion Radio team, have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll join you again tomorrow for our next edition of Compassion Radio.